Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck joins us now on a Tuesday at noon, as he does every week. Appreciate you for joining us, Tim. But I will tell you what, Tim, your name has been very, very popular around these parts over the last couple of weeks. Everyone's been talking about your Matt Nagy to the Tennessee Titans take over the past couple of weeks. It has just been catching on like wildfire. So I hope you feel popular.
I don't know if I feel popular. I guess I hope I'm right. If I'm attached to it, again, very clear, not reporting it. Just feel like, when you look at what's happened with where coordinators have gone, who's interviewed places, and all of that, I feel like it's a match. I feel like probably the direction of the Titans, it makes sense, I guess I should say, of why they're looking that direction. And I also think just the environment and the setup in Kansas City, I think, would lead to that. Now, some things obviously could change. Eric Bieniemy, he gets a job somewhere else. Maybe Matt Nagy becomes that gets the title of offensive coordinator in Kansas City. I just, like, if we're sitting here trying to predict it, that would be my prediction as we sit here on February 7th.
And I think, as time passes, and each passing day, and we don't hear any Titans offensive coordinator news, we don't hear any Titans offensive coordinator news as we get closer to the Super Bowl, I think a lot of more people, myself included, are starting to get on the Matt Nagy to the Titans train as well, at least my opinion. But I think
not to cut you off, and I think part of that is, look how this process goes, right? So, look, the Chiefs are still playing. And so I think that, coaches that are going to get hired off of that coaching staff because of the process in the NFL, as much as, people don't want to admit that that's how this works, is that, they're in a situation where they're saying, like, all right, look, we can't officially hire somebody while they're still coaching in the Super Bowl. I mean, that's the nature of it. Maybe that rule kind of changes at some point. If it does, I think, it'll be, maybe better for the NFL, but that's just how it works.
Right. The timing would make sense, or at least the lack of news that we've heard, considering the timing, considering the Super Bowl, would make sense. But I think one thing that has been worrying some people with Matt Nagy's history is that he hasn't necessarily been successful away from Andy Reid. He was successful as the Chiefs OC under Andy Reid. He's been successful as the quarterback's coach under Andy Reid, but wasn't successful in Chicago on his own. What would you say to people who may have that reservation about Nagy?
Yeah, well, I think that's a legitimate concern, and I think it's one of the reasons why, like, if you hire a head coach or a coordinator, from a position coach, because, he did a nice job with Tom Brady, or he did a good job with Aaron Rodgers, or he did a good job with Patrick Mahomes, he did a nice job with Josh Allen, while it might end up working out, I think it's like that's the process that you're using to decide if somebody's a good coach or not, then I think that there's probably a 50-50 chance, that you end up getting it wrong. I mean, look, Ben McAdoo became the Giants head coach because of the amazing job he did as the offensive coordinator for the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers. Are you a good teacher at Harvard or are you a good teacher at a public school that the kids need to be taught? Like, I think that you can't hire somebody based on the fact that, like, hey, he had success coaching this player. Now, I do think that, like, take somebody like Josh McDaniels. Like, Josh McDaniels has not had success away from Tom Brady or Bill Belichick, but I think that there's also an element of, all right, well, we like the fact that he had been a part of the Belichick process and seeing how he coached people and he learned in that building. And you can like those things, and I think that those things can also fool you. But, like, I think those things are, I guess, good markers to say, all right, he's been in, meetings with how Andy Reid talks about quarterbacks. He's been in meetings with how Andy Reid talks about offense and how he wants to coach you. We like that part of it. Now, is he able to put his own personality and spin on that, and does he have the organizational skills to do that? I think that's really what you're hoping for when you hire a coach off of a tree that, is attractive to you.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. And Tim, in fairness to Matt Nagy's time in Chicago, if you look at him relative to a lot of his predecessors, he did pretty well. He made the playoffs 2 out of 4 years as a head coach. He only had one losing season, and he had the 1 year at 12-4 where if the guy just makes a very easy field goal and it didn't double doink, you know, they could have had, you know, people thought they might have a chance to go a long way. And that was with a quarterback with pretty decent limitations and Mitch Trubisky.
Willie, I think it's a great point. I actually don't look at Matt Nagy's time in Chicago as this absolute failure.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't just a crash and burn at all. You
know? No, and I think that to your point on the quarterback situation, look, the quarterback probably played the best football of his career with Matt Nagy in Chicago. I mean, that was, you go back to that time, that was Trubisky's, that's been his best moments as a pro, is that stretch. And so, yeah, I think that's beyond, I guess what I would say is I wouldn't have these criticisms of Matt Nagy because, like, hey, look at how poorly things went in Chicago. That wouldn't be my concern. My concern would more be, look, my attention's on him because Kansas City, look at what they're doing offensively, and oh, by the way, like, this is, you know, this is because of Matt Nagy. I mean, I would make the argument, I think it's because of number 15. So, but, like, I'll give you another example. A guy that I would be like, you know who I would love to talk to? I'd love to talk to Mike Kafka because, you know, Mike Kafka, yes, he was, look, he's been around all these good coaches, either as a player or as a coach. He was in Kansas City. He also was, you know, had experience with people, you know, other places. He just was a part of what happened in terms of Daniel Jones' transformation. Like, let me talk to that guy because that his success isn't tied to one amazing quarterback.
Tim Hasselbeck with us. Tim, last year I can remember when all of the, you know, for lack of a better term, they used to call it in NASCAR all the time, the silly season. You just speculate on who's changing teams and all of that stuff. This is that time, of course, especially with quarterbacks. You kept saying throughout the last year, if you really look, it's going to be very hard for the Packers to move on from Aaron Rodgers, even if in a perfect world there were a better solution. I look at the contract he ended up signing, and it's even harder to find a way that everybody would feel good about a trade or anything else. So tell me what you think the tea leaves look like there.
Yeah, well, Willie, I think to that point, when I look back at it and think about the things I said, you know, a year ago, the hard part back then was, what's the compensation? If Stafford goes for what Stafford went for, you know, if that was the trade compensation, Aaron was too valuable. Like, up until, because, you know, Aaron had a bad year this year, but going into this year, I think he had thrown 136 touchdowns and 19 interceptions over the previous, I think, three seasons or something like that. Like, so it was just like, what kind of value do you assign to that? Like, I mean, are we talking 5 first-round picks? Like, it was just so absurd that that was always going to be a blocker because no one was ever going to agree on what the compensation would be. The only thing I think that maybe changes that now is Aaron's age, Aaron's, you know, acknowledgement of, you know, he's probably close to the end, and maybe the fact that, well, he may not play for 5 more years, right? So you may be getting Aaron Rodgers on, like, he may agree to play, like, look, I'll play for one, maybe 2 more years. That really is, I think, the only thing that could, like, suppress his trade value. And then the other side of it, obviously, is, all right, well, what happens with Green Bay in terms of the money that they paid him, what that does to their salary cap? And so that, you know, the team that would be getting Aaron obviously would have to, you know, essentially take the sting out of that for the Green Bay Packers.
And so I see a lot of people that speculate on, hey, Aaron Rodgers might fit over here. Or wouldn't it be great if he ended up over here? But nobody that I've seen lays out all of the things you just put out there. The issues with the contract. What is the compensation? You know, are you willing to give up good compensation? But just making the numbers work and then trying to deal with getting rid of the quarterback you already have. There's just a lot of practical barriers there that make it very tough.
Which is why the Las Vegas Raiders are the team now where you're like, well, that That was interesting what just happened. You literally sat your starting quarterback for the last two games. Because you didn't want him to get hurt. Now all of a sudden, like to your point, that first hurdle of, hey, we got to get rid of the guy that we have. We got to get him off our books. But the Raiders, essentially, they already did that, right? Like they look like they are already setting the table for something like that to happen. So, yeah, I think that that's – so, again, I guess as it relates to, things here locally, like that hasn't happened here. And obviously it's not the same timeline as Las Vegas was dealing with. But, like, the talk of, like, hey, maybe Aaron Rodgers is in, going to be in Tennessee, or maybe, like the things that need to happen in order for Aaron Rodgers to end up as somebody else's quarterback, like, there are a few spots you can start to identify and say, yeah, that actually could happen at that football team, and Las Vegas would be one of those teams.
ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck will stick around with us coming up next when I get his thoughts on the Super Bowl. We'll get into that with Tim Hasselbeck coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck joining us now. Tim, it's like Christmas for football fans. It is Super Bowl week. Do you think we have the two best teams in the NFL playing this weekend?
I do think we do have the two best teams. I think the 49ers probably – would it make the argument that they have a pretty good football team too. But look, if you don't have a quarterback, then obviously, it's hard to say that you've got one of the best teams in the NFL. And I think when you look at the year Jalen Hurts had, you look at how good they are on the offense and defensive line in Philadelphia, you can easily make a case that they should be at the top. And then obviously the job that Andy Reid has done, the success that they've had in Kansas City, and then obviously having one of the best players, if not the best player in football, as their quarterback, I think we actually are set up to have what probably ends up being a pretty good game. And the reason I say that is, look, Philadelphia can dominate you, but even if Kansas City finds themselves down 20 points, I just think that they are creative enough, they're talented enough offensively to be able to make a run and come back. And so I don't think the game will ever end up getting sideways.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. And I know we were talking a little bit before the break about Aaron Rodgers. And there have been two NFL execs in Mike Sando's Pick Six who said, Aaron Rodgers at the Titans would make sense. We heard Boomer Esiason go on radio in Chicago and say, yeah, I think Brady to the Titans would make perfect sense. I think the three most likely teams are the Jets, Tennessee, and the Raiders. Just looking at the fact that the Packers don't want to trade him to an NFC team, looking at quarterback needy teams that are looking at quarterbacks in this year's draft, looking at those three teams specifically, the Jets, the Titans, and the Raiders, where is Aaron Rodgers most likely to win a Super Bowl in the remainder of his career, in your opinion?
I think the Jets would be potentially the most likely, and I say that just based on how the roster's built, how talented they are on defense, the young talent that they have on offense, the fact that they could, potentially add to it, the ammunition that they would maybe have to get other players. I get that other people, and listen, other people that, presumably, know what they're talking about and maybe have some intel to connect a team like Tennessee to Aaron Rodgers. I just think Aaron's going to have a lot of control in it. And look, Aaron's issue and gripe in, things that he's kind of struggled with in Green Bay has basically been, hey, there isn't enough firepower here to help me, right? I mean, that essentially is the issue, much like it was, Tom Brady's concern, at the end in New England was like, hey, like, where are the good players around me? And look, I just don't think that Aaron Rodgers, who's going to have so much control in him moving, if in fact he changes teams, I don't think he's looking at the Tennessee Titans and saying, yep, like that roster, I can come in and I'm the missing piece to that roster. It doesn't feel that way. Where I think that when you look at the Raiders, the depth and talent that they have there, obviously they would have to resign some of their players that play there this year. Or you look at a team like the Jets, a good young running back, talented young wide receivers, a defense that's really good, and they've, you know, invested on that side of the ball in a heavy way. You know, the only issues that you would have in New York would be, you know, the health of some of the offensive linemen they've drafted and tried to develop.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. Tim, you're a broadcaster. You've also been specifically a color analyst. You kind of know what it's like transitioning from playing the game to, you know, the nuances of doing a good job in that chair. I'm really interested to see what happens with Tom Brady as an announcer. And I was surprised yesterday that he's taken a full year before he hops in there. I felt like there was time over the summer to work on these kind of things, but I guess Fox will have to wait.
Yeah, and there's part of it for me, too. I mean, just look at what the Mannings have done. You know, like to be commenting on football doesn't mean that it has to look the traditional way of, you know, being in a booth and being Joe Buck and Troy Aikman. I mean, I think that, you know, Peyton and Eli have obviously created an environment where that's not the case. And I think that, like, I think for Brady, and listen, maybe I'm not educated enough on, you know, kind of what he's agreed or what Fox has specifically announced that he's going to do, but, you know, I think almost anything that Tom Brady is going to do, people are going to have interest in it. People are going to want to watch it. And it may not be traditional broadcast with, you know, Tom Brady in the booth as the color analyst, especially if you have somebody that's doing a good job in that spot right now, which most people think that Greg Olsen is doing.
Well, that was going to be where I was going, because I do think with the old adage is, if it's a great game, you're not going to not watch the game because maybe you're not thrilled with the announcer. There's not a superstar Hall of Famer calling the game. That's where I think Greg Olsen deserves a lot of credit. You know, he was a very good player for a long time, but I think he's an excellent analyst, and people probably didn't realize how good he was until this year.
Well, and I think, I mean, let's just, I mean, call it what it is. Like, Greg Olsen has become what, you know, people wanted Jason Witten to be. You know, the thing about the tight end position is, you know, you learn a lot about the passing game. You learn a lot about the run game just because of the nature of the position that you play. So you're really educated about just the sport and offensive football. You probably have special teams experience. And so, you know, while quarterbacks and coaches have been hired to, you know, have a lot of these, you know, kind of premier spots and roles on TV commenting on the game, you know, there is an element of the tight end position, you know, being one that kind of sets you up to have, you know, a unique knowledge about the game and certain, you know, different aspects of the game. And so I think that's why some people, I mean, look, Mike Mularkey was a, you know, coach here, Ken Wisenhunt, you know, or, you know, guys that played that position. You know, there is kind of a unique perspective on the game because you've had your hand in the dirt. You know, at the same time, you've attacked coverages, and, you know, and you've maybe covered a kick or been on kickoff return. And so I think that Greg has done a nice job of, when he's commented on the games, you kind of get a sense of all that he's learned from his time as being a player, and he was a great player.
Wow, I never thought of that. It's like the catcher, right? The catcher in baseball always tends to be a good manager, sometimes a great, color commentator. The tight end is the catcher. I didn't realize that. But I think you've made a connection here, Tim. I think you're right.
Well, listen, I had an offensive lineman tell me one time, I was working with him, and he was like, you know, asking me questions about the passing game. And he's like, I never paid attention when they were talking about that stuff when I was a player. I never paid attention. And then there was a fullback who was working at the company at the time. And he's like, listen, all I did was stare at the back of the offensive line's butts in my entire career. Like, I was definitely not paying attention to that stuff. And so, you know, there is an element of, look, when a guy is playing, you know, what is he paying attention to? Is he paying attention to just his
What
job
do you have to understand?
Yeah, and I think, to your point, catchers obviously have to understand more about that, and I think that tight ends as well.
That is funny. So I guess that says a lot for Moose Johnson. He was paying attention to other things besides just the back of that big offensive line in Dallas.
Correct.
All right, Tim, before we let you go, give us the matchup that you're most intrigued with here. You know, pick either side of the ball. You know, the matchup, Eagles offense versus Chiefs defense, or vice versa.
Yeah, I'll throw two things to you. One of the things that Philadelphia does in critical down and distances is they essentially run today's version of triple option. And when I say triple option, I mean like Naval Academy, Army, like that type of triple option. It is dive, keep, pitch. I mean, that is what Philadelphia will do. So as you're watching the game, you get a gotta-have-it situation, a third and two, a fourth and one, things like that. Philadelphia will read it. Now, it doesn't look like traditional option. Like, it looks like zone read with a player running into the flat. I mean, that's what it'll look like. And they'll do it with tight ends. They'll do it with wide receivers. And so that's something they do a great job of. Philadelphia has to have an answer for that type of thing, or else they won't be able to get off the field. And then I think the other aspect of it for Kansas City, I think we all think that, there'll probably be some limitations still to Mahomes with his ankle. And I think the challenge ends up being Philadelphia is really good at rushing the passer. And, you know, Mahomes not being able to escape means that for the most part, you're going to know where he is. So you're going to know where to rush, because I don't think that, Kansas City wants to really get in and move him around. And because of that, like if Philadelphia is getting home, it could be a little bit like, you know, the Super Bowl we saw before, where they just weren't able to protect Mahomes. And no matter how talented he is, if he's on his back, it's hard to win the football game.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. Last one for you quickly, Tim. This is the Chiefs' third Super Bowl in the last 4 years. Is this the next Brady Belichick dynasty with Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid in Kansas City?
You know, I don't think to the same extent, obviously, just based on age of, you know, probably age and experience of Andy Reid at this point. I don't know how much longer. Yeah, I mean, he's going to coach for a while longer, but I don't, you know, I don't know the run that Andy will go on. But I would just say this, like I've been coming on long enough and been on with Willie long enough to know that, like, the way I feel about Andy Reid, I think he's the best. And, you know, he hasn't had the same success that Bill Belichick has had, but I think he's as good of a coach. That's how I feel about Andy Reid. And so to answer your question, yeah, I do think this is a dynasty. This is a team that, like, everything is going to have to – like, if you want to be the best, you're going to have to deal with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes for sure.
Ooh, not encouraging to hear in an AFC town here. Tim, we appreciate you for joining us. We'll chat with you next week.
All right, see you guys. Enjoy the game.
All right, thanks, Tim. And I think Tim brought up a few good points about the future of a certain quarterback and what that means for the rest of the football world. We'll get into that, and, of course, your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025. It's Caroline, Willie, DeMays, 1025, 1063, The Game.
Is there a thought in your head that, man, I gave a lot? I need to exhale. I got to give this thing some space here. Is that like time? I'm talking 15 months. I'm talking 18 months.
Yeah. I think for me, absolutely. And even, you know, decompression's important. You know, you're on this kind of really crazy treadmill / hamster wheel for a long time, loving the moment, loving the journey. At the same time, you know, it's a daily fight. You know, you wake up every day just like you do. And I have appreciation for so many people that are so committed every day to showing up to put their max effort into their life and their career. And I think for me, I want to be great at what I do. And even, you know, talking even last week with the people at Fox Sports, you know, and the leadership there allowing me to start, you know, my Fox opportunity in the fall of 2024 is something that's great for me. So take some time to really learn, become great at what I want to do, become great at, you know, thinking about the opportunity and making sure I don't rush into anything. And I think when people really bet on me, I think one thing about my career, whether it was when I was drafted by the Patriots or signing for free agency with the Bucks, I wanted to be, you know, fully committed. And I never wanted to let people down. I think my biggest motivator was that. So, you know, even in the future, I want to be great at what I do. And that always takes some time and strategizing and learning and growing and evolving. And I have so many people to rely on that can support me in that growth too. So it's going to be a great opportunity for me to take some time to really certainly become at my Fox broadcasting job, which I'm really looking forward to, but also catching up on other parts of my life that need some time and energy.
There you go. That was Tom Brady with Colin Cowherd. And, of course, the news of the day yesterday coming down last night that Tom Brady is going to join Fox's broadcast booth in 2024. Now, when Brady announced his retirement, of course, it was all, you know, acknowledging his career and acknowledging all of the things that he's accomplished. But it was also looking ahead to Okay, now does Brady go in the booth? Is he going to be calling the Super Bowl? What happens with Greg Olson? What happens with Brady's future with Fox now that he signed this massive, massive contract with Fox? Now, he's joining Fox in 2024. And, of course, my initial thought when I heard that was, is he keeping the door open for a return in 2023? Does he want to go ahead and push Fox off to 2024 just to at least leave the option open to come back to playing in 2023? Now, I don't think that he will. I think that this time the retirement is for real. I fully believed him, but at least the option is there, which I think could be interesting.
Yeah, I think if you look through history, there have been plenty of players who say, I retire, and that's it. Andrew Luck. Like, everybody was like, oh, he's coming back. There's no way he's sitting out. Come on, he's coming. He just needs to back. And he has never come back. There's been other guys. I can think of many boxers who retired, I don't know how many times, and came back how many times.
Brett Favre.
Brett Favre twice. At least.
Gronk.
Junior Seau, the late Junior Seau, came back several times.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't know how you're going to feel in a couple months, right? So anything could happen, right? And that's why I think with this, he's probably not going to play. But, of course, that door will be open. If he totally. Just put the word out in May, you know what? I'm feeling recharged. I'm feeling in a good place here. I'd like to play. You know, somebody will probably say, "Ooh, let's talk." But I even think if he wants to go into the booth next season, there is a lot of time for him to do the preparation it would need. I like that he at least is thinking enough. He knows the Joe Montana story. He knows the Drew Brees story. Mm-hmm. He knows the Jason Witten story, right? Guys who jump right into the booth, got paid big, were in the big spotlight doing big games, and they just weren't very good. They weren't naturally good. There are some guys that weren't good the first year or two but worked at it and got better. I think that's really more of a realistic plan. Like, mm-hmm. Tony Romo is an exception and not a rule. John Madden, even, he wasn't jumping right in there for the first team. There was a really good documentary on John Madden. What was it, last Christmas? Right
before he passed. Great.
It was great. And so people probably didn't realize that he was doing the second or third game early on in CBS before he moved up and was put with Pat Summerall. And then they became the team for the next, I don't know, 15 years or whatever it was before he moved over to Monday Night Football and started calling games with Al Michaels. So if Tom Brady's doing the job right, and I heard some things that sort of indicate to me that he started to think about this. How am I going to do this right? I don't want to be a guy that, because he's going to be under the spotlight. He's getting paid more than anybody's ever been paid to do broadcasting before he ever does a game. It's kind of like with NIL. We talk about, you're really going to pay all these high school kids this amount of money before you even really know if they can play? Yeah. They haven't ever taken a spot. So I think he'll do his due diligence there. So I'm curious how he prepares himself for this next phase.
And that is what he said. He's like, I want to take my time. I've been talking with the people at Fox. I really want to perfect my craft before I get into the booth. And I get it. And I think you make a very fair point about so many former players that have gotten in the booth and have failed. And it's not that we look at Drew Brees any differently or his career any differently because he wasn't all that great on TV.
Yeah.
But I can understand Brady, everything at stake, the massive contract that he has, the legacy that he's built. I understand it. I just think it's an interesting move putting Fox in that situation since they have put pen to paper and that deal has already been booked. And will you change your mind in May? Because we hear it with players all the time, and that's why Chase doesn't think that Brady really is retired, is because how you feel right now might be different than how you feel in May, in June, or July. And I do think Brady is done, but I will wonder how he feels May, June, and July when you still have over another year until you find yourself in the booth. Brady has a lot of things to take care of in his personal life. I get it. Brady's got a lot of things on the side. He's got his TB12. He's got his underwear line or whatever it is that he was tweeting about the other day. So I get it. He has stuff going on. But I will wonder, once May, June, July rolls around, how bored is he going to be? How tempted is he going to be to get into something, whether that's the booth or I don't think it's another team, but let's keep it on the table or whatever that might be.
I think May is probably a good barometer. You know, how's he feeling in May? And then the other really big one, I think, is when your body is telling you, okay, it's time to go to training camp.
Yep.
August,
mm-hmm.
September, the season starts, and those months start going. So what's he going to be doing every day? I think as a broadcaster, that's probably a little easier transition. I think you got a game, yep. right? Hey, I'm preparing for the game, just like I prepared as a quarterback for all those years.
Study, watch film.
But when you're not preparing for a game, now you've still got all these other things in your life. Like you said, there's any number of things he can occupy his time with, mm-hmm. starting with being a dad. You know, that's such a radical change. I am curious, you know, how's that going to be? Even he can't know what that's going to be like every day. And obviously, last year, at some point, it clicked pretty early. He wasn't ready to do that. He was ready to dive back in and still play.
And this this article put out by The Athletic also mentions that the timing is appropriate to at least avoid some of the questions at media days at the Super Bowl.
Yes.
Because Greg Olsen is going to be in the booth for the Super Bowl, whether Brady's in the booth in 2023 or 4 or 5 or beyond. So I think the timing was to maybe dodge some of the questions about Tom Brady.
Absolutely.
But also, if I'm Fox, don't I kind of want those questions? Don't I kind of want the hype about Tom Brady? You're paying him that much money. You may as well reap the benefits of having that big name and having that allure in the booth, whether it's in 23 or beyond.
Yeah, I think what it does, you're right. It takes away a press conference, a week of a ton of speculative questions
right.
that probably Fox doesn't even know all of the answers. Yeah, they signed him to that deal last
Brady
year.
Brady might not even either.
No question. And what a great thing it is for Greg Olsen, I think, who I think he's going to do really well on this broadcast. Like we said, nobody's going to not watch the Super Bowl saying, well, you know, I thought Brady was going to be in there, so I'm not watching. You know, they're going to watch the Super Bowl.
If you are, then you're silly.
And if Greg Olsen is good, and he's had a great attitude, I think he has a great quote in one of the articles that Richard Deitch wrote for The Athletic. He said, my only choice to do well in this is to be good. I'm not going to be given great opportunities because I was this great player like Brady. I didn't play quarterback. I didn't play in New York. I didn't win a ton of Super Bowls. He doesn't have that, right? So he's just got to overcome it by being an excellent analyst. And I think he's really come on in the last couple of years. And so he's got a chance to showcase that with the Super Bowl. Great opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Greg Olsen is probably pumping his fist thinking, I get
Thank
another
you,
opportunity.
Tom, for just kind of standing aside here for a little while, and then we'll see what happens.
I'll continue to prove myself in the booth. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. A move made by the Predators, and I know there are a lot of Predators fans that weren't very happy about it, but what does it mean, not just for this team, but for next year as well? We'll get into all of that and your text as well. 615-737-1025. And hey, it is Love Week on 1025-1063 The Game, brought to you by A Moment's Peace Day Salon and Spa in Cool Springs. Tune in to Robbie and Rex Road tomorrow morning between 6 and 9 a.m. for details on how you could win a $100 gift card to A Moment's Peace Day Salon and Spa in Cool Springs and qualify for a chance to win a $1,000 Genesis Diamonds gift card. Pretty good, especially with Valentine's Day coming up. It's Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063 The Game.
Yeah, I was just going to say the same thing. This is what it's going to take to make the playoffs, is we have to beat these teams that are close to us or what have you. Like, for example, I believe they're 11 games over 500 or 6 games over 500. You get the math here. We win tonight, it goes to 7 and 10. You're pretty close. If we don't win, for example, it goes to like 5 and 12. That's a bigger mountain to climb. So I think everybody's aware of that. We're going to have to play our best hockey in this last 34 games. But, since we had a real good meeting with our team after, poor performance in St. Louis a couple of weeks ago, the players seem to be playing much better as a team. I think the confidence is there, and it starts in goal with our all-star goalie, Saros. And I'm pretty optimistic that we're going to have a really good finish here. So it starts tonight.
There you go. That was General Manager David Poile on Robbie and Rex Road this morning. We are live here out at Pete and Terry's ahead of the Predators matchup with the Golden Knights tonight, back after the All-Star break. And these next 11 games between now and the trade deadline are so key. And I want to get into all of that. But before we do that, a good bit of a chunk of news coming out that the Predators have signed Cole Smith to a one-year deal, league minimum. And I know, when that tweet came out from the Predators account, I was reading the responses, and I just knew it was going to be World War III and those responses. And that's really what it was. There were a whole lot of frustrated and disappointed Predators fans. And look, I don't really have a problem with it. It's a year. It's league minimum. There's such little commitment to Cole Smith that it's not, you're not putting your franchise years behind re-signing Cole Smith to a one-year league minimum deal. That's not what bothers me. But kind of what I want to get into is what that means for the team next year, what that means moving forward. Because right now, going into 2023, the Predators have 9 forwards under contract. You got Duchesne, Forsberg, Granlin, Johansson, Niederreiter, Parsonen, Sissons, Trenin, and now Cole Smith. That's 9. And you've got 4 forwards that are either RFAs or UFAs at the end of the season. Cody Glass is an RFA, Tanner Jeannot, RFA, Tommy Novak, RFA, and Jankowski is a UFA at the end of the season. So looking at the 13 forwards going into 23, now that Cole Smith is taking up one of those spots, and you've got 4 free agents at the end of the season, assuming that you're going to bring back Glass, assuming that you're going to bring back Tanner Jeannot, Tommy Novak probably most likely, well, that's 12 of your 13 forwards going into 2023. Now Cole Smith is taking up one of those spots. What is the offensively, what's the plan? Because I look at this team that needs some offensive firepower going into next year, especially if you're not getting some of those contributions like you would expect from a Matt Duchesne or Philip Forsberg or a Ryan Johansson, so on and so forth. So are the Predators planning on going into next season? And I know next season is a later conversation, but now that the news is fresh, are the Predators looking at the forwards and their offense where it is right now and saying, we're good?
Well, I think really where the improvement, I believe, needs to come from is from some of these guys you just mentioned, the young players, Cody Glass. The guy you didn't mention is Phil Tomasino. I think he certainly feels like he's a big part of the big picture starting next year for sure. I think that's where you're going to hopefully see some improvement offensively. If you take a look at Parsonen, Glass, and Novak, since they have come into the lineup and started to contribute, the offense has been much, much better. The flow of the forwards has been much, much better. So regardless of whether they were going to sign Cole Smith or not, they were going to have not a whole lot of room to work with on the salary cap. It's only going up by $1 million. Mm-hmm. So these decisions that they have to make, there's not a ton of salary cap room. So I think the growth of the young players is going to be really, really important for next year. And so you hit on it. Like, they're going into a really important phase of this year, right? There's 34 games left. You got the salary. You got the trade deadline in 11 games. You're going to have to make some decisions based on how the team plays there. And then at the end of the year, you assess, did you make the playoffs? Did you not make the playoffs? All of that will dictate what happens next year. But regardless, there won't be a ton of cap space really for a lot of teams, mm-hmm. right? A lot of the good teams right now are facing a lot of the same decisions. Nashville, I think, has been more responsible than a lot of teams, like the one they're playing tonight, who mortgage the future all the time. And they're always constantly over the salary cap. How are they getting in? It's long-term IR.
It's the Rams of the NHL.
They are the Rams of the NHL. There's no question about it. But for Cole Smith, I think because he signed to a very team-friendly deal for 1 year, I don't think that really affects any of the big decisions. I think he's to be commended for growing to the point where they feel like they need him. It's a great story. He's an undrafted guy mm-hmm. that has become a very useful piece for not a lot of money. And in the salary cap, that's big, right? Getting some guys who contribute, who don't take up a lot of cap space, I think those kind of guys are very important. Novak's a really interesting one, like, because I didn't really have him in my vision for next year, but how he plays down the stretch will be important. He's been a nice little pickup. But to me, it's a good problem if you've got a lot of young players pushing. So I guess to some degree we'll cross that bridge for the company. But I think the my biggest opinion for the reaction of Cole Smith is I don't think this really affects the tough decisions they're going to have. One issue that is out there, too, that a lot of people hit on is how does this affect the Dante Fabro, Alex mm-hmm. Carrier situation? And I do think that's a key question. But that was going to be a question whether Cole Smith signed back or not. So I don't think this affects that. But are they going to be able to bring every single person back without letting somebody go? Probably not. They're going to have to find a way to free up some space to bring every young player back, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so somebody's got to go. But that happens every year, right? You can't every season bring everybody back and add, especially last year when they added Niederreiter and McDonough to pretty sizable contracts. That took up a lot of the flexibility that they had. Forsberg contract for sure. And, if those guys play well, you're happy. That's what it costs to get guys like that. So the key is, what are you getting out of those guys? And so that the next 34 games will tell us a lot there.
Right, and I think that's the key with Cole Smith is I get it. I know that so many Predators fans aren't enthralled with the idea. It doesn't completely change your team for 2023, even in the slightest. But I do wonder, you know, you sign Cole Smith. Well, the Predators do have cap space. So we're looking at what? Around $12 million in cap space where it stands right now.
For next year?
For next year.
Yeah.
You're not signing all your free agents with that money.
Right.
You know, Dante Frabert, you mentioned him. He could be on the chopping block. I think that might be a smart move coming down the pipe considering how little you've gotten out of Dante Fabro.
Yeah. Fabro makes, what, 2.4, I think? Look, I got it right here. He makes 2.4. He's a restricted free agent. So here's the issue with Fabro.
Yeah, he's a
good player, but in his role, $2.4 million is a little high for the role he's playing.
Right.
And to bring him back here, you've got to qualify him with a minimum 10% raise. So if you look at that, are you going to get a bang for your buck there based on what he's done? Now, if he takes off and does really well in these last 34 games and maybe they make the playoff, he could change the script a little bit. But right now, I think – you're right. If you're looking for, it's probably a little too expensive to keep him at that level when you have other guys that you could bring in to give you the same thing for less. That's the constant game that these GMs have to play on that. And it's nothing personal against Fabro. I think there's a ton of players around the league. You're like, I really like that player. I just don't like him at X million as opposed to this other guy who cost me half as much.
And that's just the business.
That's the business.
That's showbiz.
And that's a hard salary cap.
That is a cap. That is a cap. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. So what's David Boyle's plan? He was on Robbie and Rick's road this morning. We'll break down his approach between now and the next 11 games before the trade deadline. We'll get into all of that and your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025. It's Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063, The Game.